What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful with those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're anyone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they've got mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. If I'm driving around showing houses, out with clients, making calls, anytime I just feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll pop a piece of NeuroGum. It kind of gets me to where I need to be. I'll chew it during a workout. So get out there, try some NeuroGum.
Also, shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. Gabe with Captain Beard Co. So they've got everything you need, beard butter, oils, balms, anything you need to take care of your beard. Great products, all natural ingredients, and it smells amazing. They've got three different scents, all smell really good. They've also got body wash and candles as we have lit here. Anything as a guy that you would need to smell good, give it a check or check it out, and use promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchases.
All right, now to, before we get into introducing our awesome guest, if you're watching the show or you've been paying attention to the show for any length of time, you've realized, we're a newer podcast, we're just starting out. So if you are watching this, if you've gotten anything out of it, we ask that you share it with a friend. We really appreciate that. One other thing you could really do for us that would help us a lot is if you click that subscribe button, click the like button to the episode. And if you really want extra bonus points, write us a review on one of the platforms. Now we can get into the show. To introduce our awesome guest today, he is a roofing expert, a fitness guru, the great and powerful Big Jake, the Roof King.
Welcome.
Welcome,
thanks,
sir.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. It's still the morning, but I'm saying good afternoon. Okay.
There we go. Yeah, perfect.
Well, Jake, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself for the people that don't know you?
Getting out there.
Real quick, yeah, get that a little. You can adjust the arm. You don't have to sit as
quick. Yeah.
And adjusting the arms is something I've been doing a lot this year after getting third place at the grip contest at the home gym conference in French Lick, Indiana, hometown of Larry Bird. Second place in the Country Crush Grip Championships in Fort Worth, Texas, with Armlifting USA, which is a newer grip sport federation. Okay. And that is one way of quantifying the amount of Roof King activities that have taken place on these job sites. Not one of the installers, but I know how to stack some of these shingles up. In addition to the fitness guru, done some strongman contests, and there's grip elements to that. And so I would say fitness and the roof and bitness is what I primarily concern myself with, in addition to trying to always be a family guy like Peter Griffin. Shows about fatherhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Well, that's awesome. So let's just start with who you are. Tell us a little bit about other than the roofing stuff and the strength stuff. Who are you? Give us a little background.
I would say that I'm a bit of a classic guy. So the way that I've discovered this in the sort of physical world, I met with a fiberglass manufacturer who works at a factory in Denmark. He runs five factories. And I said, okay, fiberglass insulation, it's low cost, it's easy to make, it's lightweight, so you can ship it across the ocean. I said, what's the original insulation? How did people used to insulate houses? And maybe what's even the actual best? And he said, well, stone and wood. And that, to me, was a good representation of the idea that what's original and what's classic is often a good place to start, whether it's the methods of doing things. So like old school strength or, old school farm fresh foods, as well as thinking in some of the old school ways, because like, let's say the vice presidential debate, for example, yesterday, and that's partially what gave me that suit go today.
Looks good. Just like Vance over there.
Much appreciated. So the, but he's got to hit the gym too.
Yeah.
The idea in the debate, let's say you have one gentleman that's appealing more to originalist principles. So they're saying, hey, when the founders wrote the Constitution, they had this idea of why we were United States in the first place rather than a confederation of smaller governments. Then the next gentleman may say, well, if we do this plan, it will help these people. It will create a certain outcome. So when you're caught up on the current thing, you're trying to square those priorities against each other. But a more even original way of viewing that would be what in philosophy is called consequentialism versus deontology. So consequentialism being what's the outcome of a particular action, such as, well, we could use government instrumentally to help this group, and that's a good thing, so we should, because we have the resource and the ability, versus looking at the morality of an action in itself. So, well, what is the purpose of these funds? What is the threshold that would justify forcing people to pay a certain tax for things? And so as I just kind of applied the concept of being a classic guide to different areas in life, I just use old ideas to find new strategies.
Okay. Very cool. Well, you're very well spoken and obviously very well dressed. And I mean, you've brought the Federalist Papers, the book, with you. Is politics a passion of yours? Is that something that you read a lot about, or you dive a lot into? Like
the election year has, especially being the 2015 class president of Lindbergh High School.
All right,
which everybody's, caught up on, well, who's going to be the next one? Well, Big Jake's been in the role for 9 years, and now it's time to deliver a really solid 10-year anniversary, because we're going to be reestablishing lost connections. We're going to be finding new things in common, because people over the 10 years have had, new experiences where potentially you have things in common with folks that you didn't previously. And my favorite thing is running into somebody random at the gas station or at a grocery store, where a lot of people are like, oh, I just saw this guy from high school. I only kind of know. That's so awkward. It's Big Jake's favorite thing.
Yeah.
Just like in the awkward moments. Is that what you're saying? You like to make things awkward?
Yes. Okay, and perfect. So to get back to why I had chosen the water today is I'm so sensitive to the caffeine.
Okay.
That I'll just, my energy level can be somewhat like a wild animal. Like, I'm pumped up right now.
Okay.
I'm trying to hold back a little bit. Okay. Just with this excitement.
Yeah.
But, the idea of the presidential year has just given me an urge to live the presidential lifestyle.
Gotcha.
And take charge in every way.
I was gonna say, what's the presidential lifestyle mean to you?
So that's something I've been kicking around, and I wanted to have it a little more concretized before stepping in front of these two gentlemen.
Okay. So you got it all planned out?
So lifestyle sounded a little corny, so I said we can call them the presidential proclivities.
Okay.
So let's say you've ever had people gassing up the continent of Europe. The dudes over there are so cool. They ride a little scooter and they, have lower sized fashion thing. So if Big Jake's wearing a 2XL in like a European store, I'm ripping the thing open with a nice flex, right? So what is it that makes somebody distinctly not just a great man, but what makes you a great American man? And as Federalist Papers with Jaker was being studied, it occurred to me that the way the Revolutionary War occurred is it was an accumulation of private skills, private dedication, and private weapons. So if you just kind of accumulated all the resources that all the tough guys had, that's what was available. There was no central government necessarily extracting forcefully these resources in the way that you could if there was a draft. So I said, what does it mean distinctly to be the great American? And a lot of what's touched on in these essays written by Publius, which was, Hamilton and Jay writing under a pseudonym, they talked about the resource richness of the U.S. So the Spanish may want to have access to the Mississippi River, or the French in the north are going to want to control some of the forests for their fur trapping, for example. So to have, just like having a large yard, it's a privilege, but it imbues that homeowner with the responsibility of taking care of a lot of stuff if they're going to enjoy it the right way. Nature is very, the world is a dangerous and competitive place. So with that being the backdrop and with all the possibilities that that exist nowadays, here's what I've come up with.
Okay, let's hear it.
Hear it.
So having some type of knowledge or experience even in food production and food quality. So, for example, if you've seen actual farms, good or bad, you know, factory farming, things like that, it can give you more of a grounding, kind of knowing what's going on.
Yeah, we had somebody on a couple weeks ago, owner of New Age Health and Wellness, and we got on talking about foods and just like, it's almost like there's plastic in everything that we're eating these days. And whether it's organic or not, you really still don't know what's in it. So that's a good point.
There's a Bosnian meat shop up the street where he said, this is Grand Fresh 30 minutes ago. I said, you ever eat this stuff raw? He says, yeah, I eat that raw. And that's a different level of confidence than you would have. And then again, this is not an endorsement of eating raw meat or anything like that, but just the sort of visceral sense of the human body knowing, oh yeah, I can view this as being completely different than, you know, hormone antibiotic meat, for example.
Sure.
And then a subheading of that is being good somewhat with animals. So are you, you know, comfortable around, you know, chickens, things right. like that. Then construction quality and design, skills and knowledge. Even if you're not an enthusiast of it, if you're a tough guy, you're going to be asked to do it anyway. They're going to say, hey, can you fix this? Can you move this furniture? Mm-hmm. And so that certainly relates to what you guys do.
Yeah.
So we got, and now, you know, interior design, exterior design. I've been to a lot of the presidential homes.
I say that's definitely your expertise.
Or like the Biltmore Estate, for example. When you walk through the Biltmore Estate, it's not just about, you know, what's the art that's there. It's how does it facilitate the actual lifestyle? And then how does the style of the house kind of represent that? Because humans seem to have always invested greatly, not just in having a good house, but in having a great house and in having magnificence, showing them who's boss.
Yeah, it's like an identity.
Something you're proud of.
Yeah. Especially with what it takes to kind of, especially nowadays, to get into a house and own a home. So,
or even showing up here, you know, I'm winding through the neighborhood and I said, oh, this guy, Zach, he lives in the back of the neighborhood. This guy's in a really strategic location. He's a strategic guy, so that makes sense. Speaking of driving, transportation, that's another one. So, you know, potentially infrastructure at large, but primarily the vehicle. Are you competent with the? Do you have enough knowledge to be working the vehicle the right way and not getting stumped with those scenarios? Outdoor experiences such as hunting and fishing—that's something. Even Jimmy Carter, there's pictures of him out there, you know, hitting geese and things like that.
Happy belated birthday to that guy! He just turned 100 the other day. Yeah.
That's quite a gentleman.
That is.
Or RFK Jr., I would posit that a lot of the credibility behind his ideas for the environment. He's not just somebody that, you know, looks at some studies and has a policy opinion, but he truly enjoys the outdoors and experiences
yeah,
the outdoors.
Right.
So there's kind of a grounding element to that as well. You know, what is a calm person like? And a lot of those people that I know have those outdoor experiences.
Yeah, I mean, just look at guys like Cameron Hayes.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan. Like, those guys are all big hunters and just, like, their demeanors and the way they go, like you said. It's a calm, like they're super calm people. So,
yeah. Well, speaking of RFK, you know, I like the guy personally, but my only thing I have to say is I wonder why he works out in jeans. You being a fitness guy yourself, I'm curious. Do you have any opinion on that?
That's a good one.
Depends on what you're hitting that day,
right?
You know, obviously, you're not going to be doing squats in jeans.
Do your own.
I got
thing,
some. I got some squats.
King.
You can do jeans. I got some jeans. You can do some squats in.
I've got some too that are
nice
that
and
are
stretchy.
Potentially, it could make you feel like maybe if you're hitting bench or you're hitting some grip work, it could make you feel like a little bit sturdy. So I will say, I've in some strongman contests, I'll just show up with some nice laced up boots.
Okay.
Because you know, speaking of grounding, it kind of can create somewhat of a
almost like a lumberjack type. Yeah.
A little bit of tension from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from your roots.
And there's between the amounts of bones and muscles in the hands and feet and the amount of nerve endings, that's another of the sort of non-mainstream fitness topics I've explored a lot this year. So knocking out some barefoot hikes and things like that, getting the proprioception.
I've been messing with toe yoga. Have you ever heard of that?
Not toe yoga specifically.
Yeah, I've been my seeing a physical therapist a while back, and it was something she was just having me like work on, but like trying to like move your toes individually for themselves. I'll show you after this. Huh. It's a little bit, but like for example, just having your feet there, like just trying to lift your big toe, just lift your big toe, keep your other four like planted, or like doing, she thinks she calls it like the piano, like doing like each toe individually like this. Just something else to work on. It's something you can kind of do even like when you're sitting. And like, so it's just like right now I'm messing around with it, like lifting my big toe. Like
working it's that tibialis
interior. Yeah, it's hard to
group.
Do, man. It's like, it's a control thing. It's something that you just, you think about, oh, it's easy, but like, it's like not a physically hard thing to do, but, or like, I shouldn't say physically hard thing to do, but it's not a strenuous activity, but it's like difficult to like, concentrate on.
It's difficult in the same way that doing 84 podcast episodes is difficult. Perhaps the process of any individual one, not too difficult, but to have that consistency. Mm-hmm. So my corollary to the toe yoga is when I was training for some of these grip events, I'll do one finger rows. So get one at a time so I could, because I had to assess, I'm like, well, one of my ring fingers doesn't seem like it's maybe quite as strong. And that's actually as a slight departure from the presidential proclivities, which we'll get back to.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I want to get back to
one of them that I'm also announcing today. Official announcement. Big Jake's 7 forearm components. Okay. And I got trophies this year to back it up.
Okay.
So when people are working out, they're going by muscle group size in terms of, oh, you got your chest and legs, all this mm-hmm. stuff. Well, if you think about it in terms of numbers of bones, numbers of joints, numbers of, I mean, you even could say nerve endings, but the hands and feet, as we were talking about. So the 7 of the forearms, rather than just, oh, wrist curls at the end of the workout, that's me hitting forearms. You got your wrist extensors. Mm-hmm. You got your wrist flexors. You ever heard of golfer's elbow? Mm-hmm. Right down here? It's going to be your supinator. Okay. The way you can remember supine versus pronating. Prone, it's like going into prone. Mm-hmm. Supine, cup of soup.
Okay.
So you've got supines and pronators, extensors and flexors. Then you have the brachioradialis. And so that's gonna be the one right here when you're hitting the hammer curls. And if you look at a lot of pictures of me throwing the thumbs up, you'll see that one gets flexed. Now, an F-35 mechanic who is going to the nationals of the arm lifting. And just right when the thing started, I said, oh, this guy's going to win, most likely, just based on the anthropometry and his experience. And his brachioradialis had a greater level of development. And some of the arm lifting events, you have to have somewhat of a bent elbow. So I said, we're working on brachioradialis next. So that's like my current area of emphasis, in addition to the pronating and supinating, because I had done so much extensor and flexion that you just got to cycle in and out your weak points and strong mm-hmm. points mm-hmm. or keep never be exposed for one particular area of lacking.
Yeah, you're only as strong as your weakest point.
Since we're on the topic, we'll get back to the presidential proclivities here in a second, but what got you into the grip strength and the arm strength stuff in the competitions? What drew you to that?
So, competed in strongman for the first time in 2017, famously threw a 200-pound sandbag over bar for 23 reps.
Oh, wow.
Wait, 200-pound sandbag?
Over bar for 23
reps. How high is the bar?
It was chest height.
Chest height, okay. Damn.
And then
that's impressive.
That was after deadlifting 375 for 11 on like a fat like axle bar. I used to be a lot more gung-ho about lifting the heavy weights.
Okay.
Got to be a little more intelligent about it. You know, as the 20s progresses, the way I see it is, You don't necessarily build the strength up as quickly, and you can lose it quicker the later you get into your 20s, but you have a higher overall potential based on the
30s.
Old man strength. Yeah, that's how it's done. So that's with grip, too. The occurrence was that there was this home gym conference that just happened to have a free entry to a grip contest. So we trained the events at my friend Tony's house one time the week before and showed up and just, I mean, I even took a work call in between some of the events, and we're just sort of having fun. And then at the end, they announce the results, and 3rd place, Jacob Anderson Little, and I got a $100 prize. So I said, oh, wow, I became a professional athlete today. There was a world record strength guy who has the Arm Assassin Strength Shop, where he was a physical therapist and actually welds different grip equipment and sells it. Huh. So, and he's a professional arm wrestler. He's in a different state. Okay. But I learned enough from him there that I had and bought some of his equipment that we started getting after it with some of these grip events. My parents live in Texas, so I saw that Fort Worth contest as a good kind of opportunity to visit them. And it's somewhat about the idea of grip being an interesting topic and something that's really useful for a lot of different activities. But there's a notion of going with the flow. So if you're good at something, you may as well get really good at it. So my brother, for example, a little taller gentleman, not quite as stout. And he said, well, you know, Jake, you may not be quite as interested in this, but I've been doing some distance running and it's going really good. And I say, you know, you're good at that. So it makes sense to kind of lean into that. So I did an Olympic distance triathlon a couple years ago. Did it under 4 hours, you know, hammering 26 miles on the bike, or maybe 24, running 6 miles, swimming a little under a mile in a lake was the first thing. And it was cool, but it kind of had a participation vibe to it because, oh, it's impressive that a 215-pound horse was able to finish the race, and it's cool that you took that on.
Here's your little medal.
But it didn't have the same advancement of, yeah, Big Jake's getting in there and he's doing the strength.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. I'm the same way.
The kind of area of study of it too. So if you think about a bat wing, if you look at the bones, it's technically the same type of structure as a human hand. It just has a different function. So that's called a homologous structure. An analogous structure is where you would have a different tissue type, but still the same function. So like a bird wing versus a bug wing. The bird wing has the bone and muscles, whereas the insect would have more of an exoskeleton. So the idea that the phalange bones can either be used to be a flying mammal or picking up 350 pounds on that axle bar, right, double overhand.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. And so you said you just did a couple competitions recently?
The one in Fort Worth was in August, yes. Okay.
Awesome. And you won that one?
That one I got second in the weight class.
Okay.
Love that.
That's great. Yeah.
And congrats. Appreciate it. A lot of the guys were from Metroflex Gym, you know, the Ronnie Coleman and stuff like that. So
lightweight.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's a good, it was a good mindset exercise. If I went in there like, yeah, we're, you know, mystery guy from Missouri shows up and he's going to stick it to the Metroflex guys who are going to partway through the event say, Jake, that was a beautiful lift. How have you been training for this? And I just say, Roof King. Yeah.
So,
yes. But then by the end, I was like, these are cool guys. I'll, you know, stay in touch. Like, this at the end of the day is a community. So we're not competing for respect. We're building mutual respect. So that's the other thing with grip sport, in addition to being kind of safer in a way, is it's a little more chill of a vibe.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So like, what kind of events do they have for like a grip competition?
Fat bars that roll. Mm-hmm. So you have to implement some counter rotation. There's some where the rigidity of your fingers comes into play. So that's one of the other components of the forearm is the finger strength. So you could be good at holding something without necessarily being able to hand fasten a bunch of nuts and screws. Or the extension may be a little weak. Now, some will say, well, if you're just gripping something, is the extension that important? Well, what occurred to me on this double-armed fat bar rotating event, I think that's piece called the Country Crush Raptor, 2.5-inch diameter, and the strain on the thumb where it connects both to the radius as well as the interplay between the other fingers on the thumb, so you're kind of extending the thumb in a way, which is the seventh component of the hand of the forearm strength.
Like Jake, okay. Big Jake's,
yep, you got the fingers and then the thumb that moves in a lot of different directions.
Gotcha. So I'm assuming, like, rock climbers and people like that, they have unbelievable grip strength and forearm strength. I mean, I'm guessing they're doing a lot of the stuff that you're talking about then.
Climbers show up to these events. Mm-hmm. And then there's a gal named Tammy who So of the 33 competitors at the home gym conference event, she got third overall. She beat damn near every heavyweight male.
Oh, wow.
And she's also a professional climber.
Okay.
So that's where one of the things I was talking about is like the climber grip. There's some
like just the tip of the fingers.
Yes. There's some where you lift it up like it's a sphere.
Oh, you know, like palm a basketball. Like a basketball.
Yes, but it's a heavy basketball. And it's so that's it goes back to being ambidextrous. So I'm picking up a little golf recently. Well, I'm learning to golf lefty as well because I don't just want one nice oblique. And my muscles, I'm an easy gainer, so I don't want to have one really big right pronator, but not have a big left pronator, because when I was at this grip contest, I had just overtrained a little bit to one of the fingers on the right hand was just a little worn out. So on the two one-handed events, I actually completed both of them with my left. Become ambidextrous and you'll be twice the athlete.
I'm ambidextrous. Right, left-handed, do everything right-handed. I can do can write with both hands.
But you throw left-handed, right?
Oh, I wish. I probably wouldn't be sitting here if I threw left-handed.
It's like, was Shohei Ohtani really the first guy to think of doing pitching and hitting at the same time?
No, Babe Ruth did it.
First recent guy.
I mean, there's guys that do it. I mean, when I was with the Reds, there was a guy named Michael Lorenzen. He was drafted as a pitcher in the first round, but he could have been drafted. Like, he was also good enough to play in the outfield, get drafted in the first round as an outfielder. So the Reds, when they signed him, they're like, well, here's your options. And this is probably going to get you the big leagues faster, but you know, we'll let you hit along the way. But if you want to get to the big leagues, you're going to make it to the big leagues as a pitcher versus a hitter faster. And he's like, not to say that you wouldn't make it as a hitter. But yeah, he was a recent one. I think there was a first round draft pick this past year out of Florida that's a two-way player. So you're starting to see more and more of it since Ohtani, but previous to that, like when I was playing, when you got labeled as a pitcher, that's all you did. Like, you were a pitcher only. And I was fine with that. Once you start mixing in curveballs and things like that, I'm screwed. You throw me a fastball, I can hit it. But curveballs, I'm bailing out. I'm screwed. So, but
not my thing.
Yeah. But I mean, you see it with like switch hitters, and now switch pitchers are becoming a thing. Guys that throw with both hands. You're starting to see more and more of that as kids are growing up. I mean, I thought about it with both Connor and Oliver. Oliver's my youngest. And you know, he isn't quite sure which hand to throw with yet. They're both not very pretty looking, but we can train them both ways and see which one he winds up throwing with. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think being ambidextrous and being able to do things with both sides. And it also, I think it has more to do with being able to use both sides of your brain and the way you think and mentally control your actions in a sport. That really, really help with that.
Yeah. Well, and also having both, being good at both sides is going to, most people, like, for example, in the sports I play or participate in, you know, I'm way better at defending things on one side than I am on the other side, because that's the way everybody if someone's trying to pass my guard, most people pass to the left. And so I am way better at defending on that side. But if somebody starts pass, like my coach famously like passes the other way, and it's very hard to deal with because he's very good at passing that way. And most people are not as good at defending that way. So just being ambidextrous and really anything, I feel like is a huge, huge asset.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
The next presidential proclivity. Now that we know all the components of these forearms.
Yeah.
It's sick that you work with the Reds.
I used to play for them.
That's even more legit. I did listen to several of the episodes because I got to know who I'm talking to. That's a big element of Roof King's strategy. Mm-hmm. But, brother. Interestingly enough, physical training in combat is one of the next ones.
Now you're talking our language. Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, the main function of presidency is military and law enforcement to an extent. And you can either demand respect by appealing to your position. Oh, I have this role, or I wear this hat. Or you can command respect with the actions that you're taking in life. And, there's a great Gerald Ford, actually, I'd say, is a pretty underrated presidential athlete.
Really?
He was getting out there. I forget exactly what he did.
But. You know, I think he played college football.
Gerald
is what
Ford?
It was. Yeah. I think it was college football. I'm pretty sure. College football player. He's a big guy. Yeah.
See here. See what Gerald Ford did. 38th president.
Bush owning a baseball team. Barack Obama playing a bunch of basketball.
There it is right there.
Football player.
Football, yeah.
He was a Wolverine, University of Michigan.
Yeah, center.
Yeah.
Yeah, damn.
Hell yeah. Tough person to be a center in college. Especially, fuck, back then they didn't have probably didn't have helmets.
No, he doesn't have a helmet on here.
And that sounds so funny, but that was only
two undefeated seasons and to win national titles in 1932 and 1933. In his senior year of 1934, the team suffered a steep decline, but won only one game. But Ford was still the team's star player. Damn. Pretty cool.
Awesome.
And another element where the combat may come into play is, so part of why I feel very free with my ability to dispense my opinions is because the work I'm doing is very demand oriented and is there's physical necessities of the person delivering the service. And so the idea of, oh, well, Jake, you know, doesn't eat seed oils. And Jake believes somewhat in a ketogenic diet for treatment of ADD before going to stimulant drugs. I don't want that guy to fix this super urgent thing that I need done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other element of sort of bravery of opinion, this one's a little more subconscious, is it one that you can defend? So mm-hmm. like they'll look at, oh, if men's testosterone levels are lower, they're less likely to be able to voice an opinion. Right. Or they're less likely to take a risk of disagreeing with somebody. And I think that comes from the hind brain of you just didn't have the chicken that day.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you, with somebody with low testosterone, I have no problem disagreeing with people. So, yeah, no, it's, yeah, I mean, that's a big topic that we've been talking a lot about, too, is low testosterone. I mean, Zach and I both take testosterone because of where we're at with low T. But yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that was something that it would cause would be, I guess, makes you more agreeable,
more submissive. I would imagine.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Or was it quiet, soft-spoken people during COVID that were refusing to wear the mask?
No.
Or was it tough bearded guys?
Yeah.
Who, you know, work with their hands and all that stuff.
Sure. Cause they're not scared of shit. They're out there in the world.
And it may be less. Yeah. It may be less about like the specific T level, but more of, are you a big dog or not?
Yeah.
Are you scared? Are you scared of the cold? Or are you not? I agree.
Quarter Swedish, so I happen to enjoy it.
Okay. Yeah.
ancestral memory. You know, we're at the house. My dad's cutting up the fish, and I'm like, hey, can I try that out? He's like, no, we're gonna cook it. You gotta cook it. You gotta get it from that one market if you're gonna eat it raw. And then, sure enough. Bunch of years later, I'm crushing all these sushi bashes.
Oh, yeah.
But scaled that one back too, because remember the thing about the ketogenic diet?
Lots of rice.
So I've just have a lot of experience trying it out.
Is this a newer thing, the keto thing for you? You've been doing this for a while.
I've been experimenting with this for a few years now.
Okay.
But since you had mentioned the podcast, I said, you know what? We're going keto the whole time until the podcast begins.
How do you feel?
So pretty spectacular, I would say.
Okay.
There's now I'm also a generally bigger dude.
Yeah.
And if you talk about the ancestral memory of, oh, North Europe, well, maybe they would have had more like rich animal fats based. So, you know, everything can be individualized. But like if you look at medicating ADD with stimulant drugs, what do stimulants do? It activates what are called catecholamines in the fight or flight response. You get a little more adrenaline going. Different things that influence that prefrontal cortex. Well, you know how people will get kind of like stressed out if they don't have the carbs? I guess the theory is that just having a little bit of those, a little bit of that edge, as well as the brain's ability to use ketones as fuel, I find I actually need less sleep and I need less caffeine.
Yeah.
As well.
But now, since you've been on this keto diet, what's a typical day eating look like for you?
You know how you'll see a lot of influencer videos where they say, and then for lunch, I had 4 ounces of ground beef with honey and an avocado and all this.
Yeah, yeah.
here's how Big Jake rolls. It'll be more so, we had a pound of meat and half a pack of bacon.
Love it.
Or it's like, we had 8 pieces of bacon and 9 eggs.
Yeah. Love it.
Or drank a quart of whole milk.
Mm. Love it.
So it's not necessarily, oh, like zero carbs, but the satiating animal.
Well, a true keto diet isn't absolutely no carbs, because you're going to get some carbs with things, you know. But I think it's like supposed to be what?
Natural
like
carbs.
70% fat, like 20% protein and 10% carbs or something.
My general strategy is, let me stay roughly under 100.
100 grams?
Grams of carbs, yeah. Because, you know, pretty active job.
Yeah, you need that glucose. You're still going to need that glucose for those workouts.
Timing it around the workout.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I've done keto diets. I've done the carnivore, where you're just eating meat and eggs and fish, or meat, eggs, fish, dairy products. But that's the one part where I feel like I do notice anytime I've done it, I do notice like a decline in my workouts is if I don't eat carbs before or after my workout.
Getting a little stressed. Mm-hmm. And so what does cortisol do? Breaks tissues down into glucose that you can use. And so that's where, so in addition to the presidential proclivities, in addition to the 7 components of the forearm in hand, the other little Big Jake project that it's finalizing it a little bit, because it really only seemed fit if I were able to get some of your guys' input on what the challenge should really entail. So talk about doing your own thing, being your own king. Everybody, there's that one challenge everybody does that lasts 75 days. Mm-hmm. And it's, if you look at the 2 workouts a day, it's really focused on some of the outputs rather than what's the actual cultivation of either the knowledge that you're reading in the 10 pages a day or the fitness results from the 2 workouts a day. So instead of 75 hard, I've come up with 28 Jake.
Okay. All right, 28 Jake, hit us
28
with it.
Jake. So no caffeine after 12 noon. Okay. And it's got to be,
so that's one of the, so each one of these is 28 or one thing
basically. So my 28th birthday was recent. Okay. And then you just got to do it for 28 days to 75.
Heard.
So cutting the caffeine after 12 and only having caffeine that came from your house. Some of the background on that, or like if there's like an artisanal coffee shop that does it right. Because if you have a gas station coffee, Jake Gonzalez, also a Limburg grad, owner of Proven Grounds in Illinois, he says that if there's impurities in the coffee, or if it's old, or it's just not good stuff, it can interfere with your adrenal system. And that's actually where some of the jitteriness or some of the anxiety comes in. Or the whole scenario wasn't optimized to actually feel energy. And so you're using an amount of milligrams that it could be like messing with the circulation a little bit. You know, your toes are getting cold. And so just sort of getting the caffeine sorted out. You're going to sleep in one of the weekend mornings. And this is more so if you're someone that naturally wakes up like at 7, maybe you go to like 7:45 or like 8:15. So this isn't like a sloppy all day Sunday kind of thing. Yeah. Gets absurd. Except besides extenuating circumstances.
Sure.
You know, I'm not a tyrant. But so you got to sleep in a little bit on one of the weekend mornings, and then you got to stay in on one of the weekend nights. And the way that you make sure that that's dialed in is the other rule. Lights in the home off by 9 o'clock every day. So you can still like be on screens and stuff. You know, they say, oh, we'll get off your screens in the evening. Well, there's different, you know, varying extents based on people's responsibilities to which that's possible. But if you turn off the lights, it seems to be the case, and I'm sort of sensitive to the lights coming in, you know, turn them down, get dimmers, things like that. That's actually seems to be more of a visual input than if there's like a small screen. So killing the lights by 9.
Okay.
Couple ounces of cranberry juice every morning, because there is iodine, and the iodine is big for the thyroid. So you'll notice if the thyroid's off. And again, this isn't medical advice, but if you're asleep and your gut health is off, I find that you can get like cold easier, versus if I'm feeling solid and optimized, the body is just more, you just run at a higher temperature. You know how they say 98.6 degrees?
Sure.
A lot of people, when they actually measure it, they're rolling in the 97s. So they're not quite burning as hot. So the cranberry juice and the coffee is one way, in my opinion, that you can really dial back some of the stress amounts. And then when you look at the lights, you're familiar with the sine graph, right? Mm-hmm. Sine and cosine. Mm-hmm. And they talk about area under the curve. So did a little experiment a couple weeks ago where one group's invite me to the Cardinals game. Ton of light, ton of noise, smells, crowds, everything. Another friend invited me to Tomsock Mountain, High Point of Missouri. There's an observation tower where you can climb up and it's, you can see just a really nice horizon, had a relaxing, sunny day. And the heart rate the next day, when I checked it on the watch, was 44. Wow. So it was the one today was 50. So I'm relatively, I'd say, a little more stressed a couple days ago, it was 55. So I track it every day to kind of get an idea of what is my stimulation level, because the way a sine graph works is there's a somewhat sort of equal reaction. So if you're really super stimulated, guy went to an EDM festival all week, well, then he's going to be in bed the whole next week. And so some of the caffeine usage in society, just based off me observing this and being quite sensitive to it, so I notice these little things, is the low portion that people experience is actually recoiling from just merely perceiving daily life. So all the screens and all the clutter and everything like that, I don't know exactly what resources in the brain it's using up, but there's just only so much capacity. So if I find the more I cut out some of the extraneous things or don't spend too much time in like the noisy city and things like that, I just have more focus left over for other things. And that's why I'm so cranked and focused.
Nice. There you go. That's awesome.
Fired up. I love this.
Yeah.
This guy cracks me up.
So
and now you're hearing this. Imagine if I cracked open one of these.
Right. Yeah. I'm just like,
thank God we didn't.
There's a good call. Good call. Good call on the note.
I don't know if we could keep him in a chair.
Well, the energy's been great.
Yeah. So what's our next proclivity, Jake?
So art, style, and history. So prior to doing the roofs, and part of why I'm absolutely crushing it, it's half luck, half just having a good idea and running with it, and then 15% concentrated power of chill.
Yeah, I got you.
So yeah, you know, 110%, yeah. Well, yeah, now I'm doing 115%. Okay. So anyway, I was making less than $50,000 despite being in the team member hall of fame, mm-hmm, of, you know, State Farm, the agent team member sales and all this stuff. And even a big household you bring in, oh, you know, $3,000 of home premium for the year, getting like 4%. So I'm dealing with these really sophisticated concepts and I'm loving all the learning about house materials and the game theory of insurance.
So you were the true Jake from State Farm. Yeah.
So it really was going well, except for I felt that disrespect. And as I was quitting that, part of what gave me the guts to become self-employed doing roofs is I was at the art museum and I was looking at a collection where it said who owns the collection and is lending it to the art museum. And I said, I'm not on track to own a Picasso. I'm not even on track to see a Picasso in Europe. And you're looking at all these, you know, things from around the world. So that's getting me going. And then I realized, remember we talked about going with the flow, what's your strength? So at the time, you know, you compare yourself to people that are kind of in your realm or maybe kind of just edging you out a little bit. So I'm talking to different STEM guys and one of them's, oh, I'm making, you know, $90,000 at Visa and all this stuff. And I said, either Big Jake ain't got it or society is saying that my skill isn't as valuable as like the computers and things like that. I said, yeah, but relating to people and speaking and getting your mind right, I said, that's as timeless a skill as it gets. This has to work. We got to figure something out. So I leaned into being classically educated. Uh-huh. And not many roof guys are coming in with a little architecture book telling Zach that his house has somewhat of a New England style that is simple and sweet.
Okay.
According to the Architectural Society of New England, you know what I mean? So the history, goes back to not being caught up on the current thing or just making good conversation and learning about what real tough guys did. So like Jared Ford's football thing was pretty intense. The old school strongman activities as well. So rather than comparing yourself to, oh, what some other guy's doing right now, you say, wait a sec. The human species can't biologically change through evolution too much in 100 years, but the training can change. So how can I make my training resemble that? And so one of the aspects of 28 Jake is to in-depth research the history of your profession. That's another one. So if you were able to tell somebody, what was the first mortgage in history?
I think it dates back to like 1600s, I think, is when they started over in Europe. To go back and
research it. Yeah. I'm gonna look into the first real estate agent for sure, because you're gonna ask me that next, and I'll be honest, I do not know.
The first contestants of 28 Jake.
Yeah, I love it. We're in.
So the next one
Before we move on, I do wanna ask you, or you know, kind of continue, or if you could elaborate more, switching from selling insurance at State Farm to getting into roofing. How was that transition and how did that come about?
So the conversation I had with a roofing gentleman whom I insured, and I had actually done roofs prior to working at State Farm. I just didn't have a good experience because it was with a sort of national company, and I drove to Hurricane Florence in 2018 in a Hyundai Elantra, crashed the vehicle, bought a sick Chevy Trailblazer. So that was sort of me starting to connect with my inner tough guy, you know, go. Looking back, I was like, man, I was really had a pair of stones to be out there doing that and climbing these ladders and all this stuff in a pair of Payless boots. And before that, I'd been a counselor at a summer camp where I was the belay on the high ropes course and the outdoor adventure guide. So I was already getting into that outdoor mindset, the tough guy mindset. And it had occurred, people had told me you got to do sales just with your personality. So I did do the traveling roof thing, doesn't work out. Then come back to State Farm. Got really into the licensing exam. So people view that as being the, oh, you get this out of the way. But I'm sitting there, I'm like, no, this is human psychology and economics combined on a grand scale, such as State Farm has two different classes of motorcycle insurance. There's one for if you're unmarried, male, 25 or younger, and the motorcycle is the primary mode of transportation. So they basically distilled into formal logic the little idea you have of some motorcycle guy. They're able to figure that out and spot it, where they check credit really aggressively too. So that's the thing people don't get with insurance. They say, I haven't had any accidents. Why was it 280 a month? They hit you on credit like you would not believe.
Well, it's a different type of credit score. It's different than kind of like what I'm looking at. I think it's like an insurance credit score.
And so it's not like a hard inquiry, but there's also a little less clarity as to what exactly is the proprietary blend that they're basing the rate off of. But I could tell that like when you would do, and I hope this isn't proprietary info, but when I would do like a home insurance application, it would say reasons for score, and it would say number of overdue accounts, number of revolving credit accounts, collection agency filings, because it's a predictor of does this person pay their bills on time or is this the type of person who may need money in a pinch?
Well, that, and then I also heard like part of that is kind of like when I run a credit report, it shows me how many people have run their scores. Like with insurance, I heard that if you get to see how many different insurance companies they've had over their life, because obviously someone that has a new insurance company every year, they're jumping ship. So it's like, all right, well, if I'm going to lose this person in a year, that person's going to get a higher premium versus someone that's been loyal. They get the lower premiums.
And being a bigger player, State Farm, I even saw some data about how if somebody has a boat with them, they'll on average stay for like 17 plus years. So basically all the characteristics that I know about their underwriting, I said, those are the people I'd like to do roofs for. Mm. And they're known for not really approving the roof that much because you need legit damage, because other companies that know that you're going to just switch the next year, we'll pay out roofs and get a good name for doing that, but they don't have quite the wallet to take care of a hurricane or to take care of like insane damage and pay it really correctly and get it back up to its pre-damage condition. And so basically I was just fed up with it. I even just sitting down, it felt like people say, oh, is it a physical job or not? Well, last time I checked, sitting down in a chair and at a computer, this is physical. It's just not the type that's going to really get your posture dialed in, and it's not going to be a stress relief in the way that getting a nice panoramic view from a roof would be. So the main transition is that Kyle Armstrong, the K-Pro Roofing and Renovation owner, great entrepreneurs of St. Louis, is he taught me all about carrying the toolbox. So the background I didn't have, the presidential proclivity that I was short on was the construction aspect. So I had to learn about doing the repairs and learn about identifying problems and then having to learn about all the different types of construction material, which is why the next proclivity is actually geology and physical sciences. So Thomas Jefferson was one of the first meteorologists in the U.S. Ben Franklin, obviously super big into the sciences, and also invented fire insurance as well, because everything used to be made of wood. So fires were a way bigger deal. And you guys actually talked about the Benjamin Franklin autobiography on the podcast. Can't fake that.
Which episode did we do that on?
I don't remember. Either. Shoot. Go back and watch our own episodes.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to watch a lot more of them, and now I've like fallen off keeping up with our episodes.
Same.
I got so many other podcasts I listen to, and it's so hard. No.
And bringing it back to where it relates to realty and mortgages and things like that. Let's say you want earthquake insurance. Oh, but the house is within 50 feet of a cliff. Or, well, if let's say somebody's foundation is cracking, you'll want to have good tools to explain to them. Well, you see, the ground is generally shifting a couple millimeters a year that way. And that's going to create a hairline fracture down the foundation. Or, if they say algae is growing on my siding, how clever would it be to say, actually, algae is eating your siding because it's a cyanophyte, a photosynthetic bacteria. Read that in the encyclopedia over the winter last year. And so it would help explain why you wouldn't paint certain things, or like why a certain paint wouldn't last on a surface, because at its base, a lot of it is the physical properties of it's science rather than which brand or what the product name is. So then the next one would be manufacturing and characteristics of physical goods. So if I were to just break it down into three areas, you got to know: wood, petroleum, and metals. So like rubbers, plastics, adhesives, paints, and then that would be the petroleum stuff. So just knowing all the different ways that oil is involved in your manufacturing process. And then wood, got to know the different dimensions of lumber, you know, standardized lumber. So then a cool story to throw in there is we were at the Abraham Lincoln House in Illinois a few weeks ago, just doing, you know, again, camping trip, Labor Day. And they've made the town have other houses you can tour, and they had one where they had opened up the wall and you looked at the wood and it said this is a non-standardized wood measurement, so now you have your 1x8s and your 2x4s and everything. Mm. Well, they used to just have to go into the woods and just make shit. Or they would have to cut their own nails. So if you think about a nail sweep, everybody, oh, pick up the nails, throw them away. Well, in the art of the deal, he says Fred Trump used to save all the nails. What if for every roof were magnet sweep? Save it all, even just if it's scrap metal, or that's what I use on repairs and things like that. So that's why I always have nails on me. Is that, you know, I got the regular roofing nails, I got the collated 3-inch ridge vent roofing nails. So then if there's a good transition over to metals. So like this morning, actually, I cut a piece of siding off a house and I use vinyl snips. Well, you get it, have tin snips, or got to know about your metals. Leave it at that. You got to win the medals in sport, just like you're going to do with this upcoming jiu-jitsu match against a current member of the UFC. That's very impressive, and that's part of what motivated me to bring my absolute A game today, because I respect your courage.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sport itself, that's another one of the proclivities. So this is where you get your baseball, your golf, your basketball, and there's between the camaraderie as well as the actual enjoyment of it. The reason I have it as a separate area from physical training is because the physical training is more of just building the exact machine with specific logical outcomes. versus the idea of enjoying life and or working on like the hand-eye coordination or like the reflexes and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, when we were playing baseball, that was all. I mean, it's not part of the game. You work out and train, but it's not the actual game. It's separate from the game. Game is the game. You train and work out so you can perform at your best in the game.
Yep. And I think there's so if I were more literal about just inputs versus outputs, potentially be less open to the idea of getting out and doing those games and things like that. But you don't want to get shown up in a one-on-one game of basketball. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't want to get exposed like that. You know, you got to at least put out something. And that's partially how trust and respect are built, is by having those experiences. And there's a larger amount of people that you can go golfing with than you would go hunting with and do a whole hunting trip. So that's more of like really intense, like these are your day ones. But then when it's sports, that's more general population. That's keeping up my acquaintances and friendships over time. It's presidential. So then there is career advancement and excellence. So that's, we'll name names. John Fetterman out of Pennsylvania. People were saying this guy was relying on his dad. The criticisms were made. I'm just reporting what I saw in the news a couple years ago when he had a comical race against Dr. Oz. It is presidential to at least show a good competency in something, partially because all the other ones rely on the career, whether it's you establishing the freedom to have time to do them or having the money to fund all of it in the first place, because only a few of the presidential proclivities are free.
It's your career is such a big piece of everything. It's almost like the first thing you kind of announce yourself as. It's kind of how it's part of your identity.
Yeah, you asked who I am, and I'm sitting here thinking, do I say, oh, I am a son and a strong brother and a friend and all that? I said, no, I'm the roof king. I am also all those things.
Yeah.
Well, that too. I mean, like you mentioned, I think even before we started recording, the 10,000 hours, you know, to become an expert at anything, the 10,000 hours. And I mean, that's, you want to take your career seriously, you've got to put in that time and that effort to get to that point to where you are the expert in it.
Yeah, you know, just getting out there, and it's almost hard to explain in logic why somebody's career is important. It's just somewhat manifestly obvious, and it's something just so deeply felt. So like, I've been able to develop more of a zen about, yeah, the customers I get, it's God's plan. You know, there could be guys that do more roofs, and that's okay. We're all just, you know, all God's children got a place in the choir. We're getting out there. But when I was first starting out, and I think it's common for young men in their 20s, is just and I think the competitiveness of social media as well, I really think that's turning young men into savages. So I'd be driving, they're like, they think you're broke, man. Like, they're crushing you, bro. You got to get sick. You got to be incredible.
Right.
Oh, I still definitely have that vibe a little bit, but the urgency was absolutely off the charts.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Earlier in my career, I felt the same way. It's like anytime I saw someone sold something, it's like, fuck, why didn't I get that? That should have been my sale. Or I'd drive by a for sale sign in my neighborhood, like, oh, I missed one. Or how did they get that one? And I didn't. And now it's a few years into it. It's like, oh, it's okay. You know, there's plenty of deals out there. I don't need to get every single one. I'm living a good life. We've got plenty going on. I'm busy. Things are great. So I can totally relate to
you. That's kind of where the four levels of businessman occur. It's another one I came up with.
Let's hear it.
Okay. You go from hustler, baller, gentleman, aristocrat. Okay. So hustler is the one that gets competitive and has the non-abundance mindset of losing this one deal or
scarcity,
being infinitely reductive. Because if there's 2 million houses, how many different combinations could you have sold? Infinite number of combinations of a portfolio for the. And so that's the hustler thinks that way, and then the baller may still do that, and the baller is getting money and wants to show it, has that chip on his shoulder of, oh, we're doing good. People got to know. Then once you become the gentleman, you say, wait a second, I started making money, I become everybody's sales prospect. I got to tighten my circle a little bit. I got to watch these dollars some more. I got to focus in on what's my key market and maybe start leaving a little bit of stuff off the table. And I feel like gentleman is the sort of rank I'm kind of getting.
Nice. And what's the aristocrat?
I'll let you know when I reach it.
Okay. Perfect.
I love it.
We'll bring you back on and you can explain that one.
Yeah. So we'll see. To be scratching the surface, for example, there is a local historical society that's asking Big Jake for a roof. And that would be, I would say, a manifestation of the goals that I had set out with, in terms of I'm going to be the classically educated roofer and we're going to do this in a more creative way than anyone has in St. Louis, except for the people that built the stuff originally 100 years ago. Like we're going to scratch into that and treat it with the priority of, if you read a historical inventory of the neighborhood or of the city, it's all about what was built when. They always are talking about the builders. So I said, wait a sec, we're not just some ancillary industry. We're not just sales guys. Or we're not just like, oh, we're getting out there and doing roofs. We are building history. We're doing some, we are preserving the housing stock of St. Louis, Missouri.
It's a good way to look at it.
Great way to look at it. Love it.
Rare advancement. That translates perfectly to communication and civic. So that's, I would say, an element of your guys being presidential by doing these communications and things like that. What do you say about that? What do you think?
No, I agree. I mean, I think communication, effective communication is huge, because I feel like too many people don't listen. You know, I think they are, well, they listen, but they listen to respond, not understand. And I think if you can have effective communication to where you're in a conversation with somebody and you're effectively communicating, but effectively listening, there's a lot of things that can be accomplished from a conversation. And I mean, I'm talking to people on a daily basis, and my job is to listen to them and find out what their reason is for buying a house. I mean, I do things a little bit differently, because, you know, anybody can just go and churn and burn an application and get a pre-approval out there, but I want to know the why behind it, so I can put some element of emotion to it and make it a more personalized experience for that person. If I were just to sit there and like roll through an application and ask the questions that are on an application, am I getting that? So am I really effectively communicating to these clients, or am I just talking to them? But like in this right here, this has helped with my communication skills, because I'm sitting here listening to what you're saying. I'm trying to understand, or like I'm listening to understand what it is that you're saying, so I can better know who you are as a person. And that's ultimately, I think if more people could do that and more people could understand the person, they may not have to agree with that person, but at least if they understand it, it might make it easier for them to have a constructive conversation with that person.
Presidential.
Yeah, no, I second everything he said here. I mean, that's the one of the things doing this podcast, I've gotten such an education just from sitting down with guys like you and just having these conversations. It's helping my ability to communicate. I'm learning more about myself. It's like, I almost look at them, especially when it's just him and I, it's almost like a little therapy session where I can kind of like get out my feelings, but then I almost forget sometimes that people are listening, you know. It's crazy, but it's been quite the education, and I look forward to sitting down every single time.
Yeah, I look forward to this day. I mean, about 3 hours every Wednesday to sit down and record. So, you know, an hour and a half with a guest, hour and a half for the two of us, and just overall the conversations and the way we communicate too. I mean, it's not just the conversations that we're having, but the way we're communicating and the way we're able to ask the questions that we're asking and basically and draw out a response from the person sitting across the table from us, or even just allowing them to speak on what their thoughts are and not interrupting them. Like, there's so many aspects to a good conversation and communication that people these days don't really know or understand. It's just they want to talk to talk, and you know, they don't want to sit back. Like the best way you can communicate with somebody or have a conversation with them is sit back and listen, but listen with intent to understand, not listen intent to respond.
And there's something to being in person with someone and not it's so much of our communication these days is done via text, email, you know, sitting down and just actually looking someone in the eyes and having that conversation with them like it was done 100 years ago, except for now just several hundred people listen. But it's just different. It's great. I love it.
Right. And I mean, that's why we won't ever have anybody on the show that can't be here in person, because we want to sit down across from them.
because there's so many things that you can, like, nonverbal communication is huge. I mean, how many times have you gotten an email or a text message and you've read it, but you're reading it in the tone and the mindset that you're thinking of right now, and it's coming across like you're, like, this person's upset, when really they were just being very direct and straightforward without any emotion on their side.
I'd even posit that any long text is never well received.
No.
It just, the reader goes insane.
Yeah, I agree.
Every time, yeah. Even if it's a good text.
Right.
That's what I've, and I'm a loquacious guy, so I'm fine with a lot of words and all that, but even I get a long text, I say, too much for Big Jake. Too much smoke.
Yeah.
Too much smoke.
So,
no, I agree.
What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think it's presidential, the way that you're helping people out by having them on the podcast, because this has absolutely brought out an extra level of dedication. Now, I take it serious, obviously, is kind of my thing. Mm-hmm. But when people say, Jake, you have a big month of October coming up, I hear, I say, yeah, we got the podcast October 2nd. My brother's getting married approximately 10 days after that, also in the month of October. Got the Static Monsters Strongman contest at JD's gym at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And then skydiving tomorrow as well.
Oh, wow.
Damn.
Are you excited about that? Is their first time skydiving, or you've been before?
This would be the fourth.
Okay.
And there's a really valuable moment of when the plane takes off from the ground of, you know, I'm pretty proud of everything if this ends up being the last one.
Okay.
So that's, it's good, kind of a good
yeah.
You know, Alex Hormozy will talk about, you know, think about like how when you're dead, I don't do it too often, but occasionally it is a nice feeling to have, to look back and say, you know what, if something did happen, and I think that thought may be more present just given some of the heights that I encounter, and there are some hazardous materials involved as well. Like, roofing isn't a life insurer's dream job,
right?
In terms of who they want to bring in, and but I'd rather die than be average, you know.
For sure.
So it also is a good, like, exposure therapy in terms of, well, if you fly 100 miles an hour for 40 seconds through the sky, it actually makes being on the roof a little less intimidating. And the reason that's important is the overstimulation we had talked about before. Well, if you're feeling intimidated, that's draining your hormones and your neurotransmitters. And actually, in preparation for this month, I intentionally, after the Labor Day trip, I halted my weekend travel for the month, and I focus a little more on the sleep. Like, I would intentionally say no to stuff that I knew I, you know, could do, and it wouldn't necessarily be a problem. But let's say you go outside and you meditate for 45 minutes. Let's say you're doing, like, original Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha level of meditation, and who knows how long he would have gone. If you go back to the sine graph, well, if you were just down here on the low activation, now how pumped up are you going to get? Or with martial arts, or golf, but martial arts, you're going to throw a punch. Do you want to be tense?
No, you want to be loose.
Yeah. So that also is part of the energy that I'm exuding today, is actually the stuff that I've been building up by basically doing 28, Jake. And I still want to hear what you guys think should be added on to the challenge. Mm.
So is there going to be a workout aspect of 28, Jake?
Do we
get to that?
Going back to the cortisol thing, two workouts a day of 45 minutes, that's where I think it would lead to the, like, oh, well, now I'm anticipating having to meet this burden. And not that that's a bad thing. It's a great thing, because there really should be periods of high output.
And every day.
Definitely. But I've been looking at some of the Mike Mentzer stuff recently.
Yeah.
He was a bodybuilder in the 1980s, who I think is a great representation of the smart bodybuilder. The bodybuilder is the intellectual, rather than what I think has been the destructive image of the bro bodybuilder, like the frat guy thing. That's crap, because there's so much intelligence that goes into it. Or even if the muscles being loose and limber, a lot of that's dictated by the nervous system, which is an extension of the brain. So I think mind and body both being excellent. Mike Mentzer at the time was sort of the counterpart to Arnold Schwarzenegger, who had a published workout of 6 days a week, two times a day, whereas Mentzer talked about getting more out of less and spending less time in the gym. And so by doing more like full body workouts or having a longer, more aggressive session, and or not necessarily longer because he promotes doing like one set to failure. Now it works better for easy gainers typically. So like someone that has trouble putting on muscle may need to stack more sets. But since I put it on pretty easy and then sometimes need a little longer to recover, this ends up being a really schedule friendly and recovery friendly way of doing things. And the recommendation on 28, Jake, I'm thinking may actually have a limit on the amount of working out that you're going to do. So like when I was doing triathlon, there's the general concept that exercise is stress relieving. But if I'm on the bike for 2 hours, I found I would induce just a lot of cortisol and a lot of fatigue. So I wasn't holding the mass right. I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll shred down a little bit. Physique looked relatively similar, but kind of was losing some of the muscle mass and things like that. And again, you know, different things work for different people, but the idea would actually be to limit some of the chronic cortisol stuff from the working out and focus more on the recovery.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, there's a podcast that I just listened to recently. There's literally 3 hours all on recovery. And because we look at working out and exercise as just, and that's a critical piece of it is the recovery. And that's something that me personally, I don't put enough emphasis on that. I'm just kind of go, go, go all the time. And I definitely don't put enough effort into like relaxing. I always feel like I'm being lazy if I'm sitting down and I'm relaxing and I'm chilling. This whole podcast with Mike Israetel and Chris Williamson was like 3 hours on recovery. I'd recommend it.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Or Israetel recently had a disagreement with the concept of grounding, but I think that's a good one. At the very least, we know it's not harmful and it's free.
Right. Right.
I agree. What muscle specific recovery tactics did you use to overcome and avoid overuse in baseball?
Did a lot of stretching. A lot of stretching and yoga, and then running. Running was after you get done throwing, running was always a big thing. We did ice baths, hot baths, a mixture of the two.
Contrast therapy.
Yeah, contrast therapy. A lot of foam rolling, things like that. So, most of it was stretching, foam rolling, contrast therapy. And then we would have very lightweight, shoulder routine, like exercises with like band work or like, I don't think we ever lifted more than like a 5 pound dumbbell for like shoulder rotation, active recovery that way. So,
and then that was one thing they talked about on that podcast was recovery is almost always not about doing more of things or extra exercises. It's almost always, it should be focused on doing less things. That's when your body's really truly recovering, when you're not using those muscles and spending more time just repairing itself and getting it back and building it up stronger. So it's something I think we could all use a little bit more of.
They would make us, so we'd ride a bike as soon as we got done pitching. We'd come out of the game, we'd hop on a bike for like 15-20 minutes just to flush, and then from there do the shoulder routine, which was 6 different exercises with either a band or a weight. And then from there you could ice or heat or however contrast. And then the next day was the stretching.
Can I borrow this pen?
Stretching and the running and all that stuff.
I'm gonna write this down and give you the respect of as a man of actually doing this. So We got a major league ball player in here. It's a big deal, you know? So, you said bike for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. 15, 20 minutes. So, bike, push. Get the lymphatic system in there
after a game, you'd go on bike.
Then 6 exercises on the delts.
No, on your shoulders and your rotator cuff and your lats. Belts, shoulders.
Lightweight.
Yeah, super lightweight.
And so these are internal and external rotation.
90s. Holding a band or a weight from the side. Doing sides and doing way and then tape down. And then from hip and extending up this way.
Staying alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for everyone that you're pushing, you're pulling. So it's not like I'm just starting down here. So I'm starting up here and downwards. And then you had your Y's,
and T's. Yeah.
So
keeping that posture nice and strong.
Biggest thing was you always had to make sure your shoulder blades and your scaps were. Is that your scaps as well as working on this? Your shoulder blades are pinched together and down. Like you pinch your shoulder blades together. Keeps your shoulders back, keeps your chest up.
Good posture.
Yep.
That's another thing with the modern society. Everybody's posture is a joke. It's Everybody's bad. Developing a Dowager's hump right here. They're doing this, creates tension in the jaw. I recently had a bit of a tight sternocleidomastoid because I did get to a jiu-jitsu class.
Oh, yeah? How did that go?
That grip strength is really good for not getting choked out. That's what I could say.
Yeah, I'm sure. Was it gi or no gi?
This one was gi.
Yeah. Well, I bet the grip strength, gi, that's a huge aspect. Huge aspect. Because people, you have to break those grips if you want to move forward.
Well, and
make it a grip that they don't want.
That's the tough decision. That was something I was looking to learn from you today. So I've got some of the strongman activities that I do. I don't want to fully be like a competitive strongman, and I'm going to frame everything around doing that just because of some of the taking it too far can have some consequences and more tension. You know, this 28 Jake is all about being nice and loose. So I still want to be, you know, throwing around 400 pounds on some lifts. But the sort of tightnesses and small injuries of doing jiu-jitsu, everybody at that studio is saying, when's that 220-pound horse going to get back in here? And I'd like to.
Yeah, where'd you go?
It's something in South City off, like, Gravois, a guy named Jason.
Oh, was it Absolute?
I actually don't remember the name. Okay. So focused on my electrolytes that day. It was one of those hot days. And he said, you know, on these really hot days, everybody's sweating like crazy, but we're all loose so no one gets hurt. Whereas in the winter, it's all comfortable and everything, but then you'll snap something. You know, I hear the way some fight community folks will talk about, yeah, and then he cracked my ankle in an ankle lock or whatever, and my body is my income in terms of like all the physical stuff and really needing to like feel well every day. So how do you recommend squaring away those priorities?
Well, thankfully, I don't have a very physically intense job. Like, I had a knee surgery a couple of years ago, and I was able to do my whole job on crutches. So thankfully, that doesn't affect I'm still able to sell real estate with one leg. But it is definitely a concern for a lot of guys that I work with. I mean, a ton of guys that I work with are plumbers, electricians. We had a guy that, you know, was a dentist. You know, can you imagine how important your fingers are to being a dentist? You know, we made fun of him when he first came in because he was wearing like MMA gloves to do gi jiu-jitsu. And we're like, bro, that's not really going to save you. You know, you can wear them, but you just look silly and we're all going to kind of make fun of you. But, you know, it's just a risk. It is. And as far as like your fingers, I would imagine like no-gi would be a little bit more less intense on your hands specifically because you're not having to grip up on people's clothes and stuff. But I mean, injuries happen. But here's the thing, man. I always tell people are always very concerned with injuries, as rightfully so, because I mean, the whole name of the game is I want to break your bones before you break mine. You know, I mean, when we stop it right before they break typically, but accidents happen. But I mean, how many people do you know that got injured playing? Like I can name three people right now that I know that tore their ACL playing co-ed intramural college basketball, you know?
Oh, I smoked my ankle on some frisbee golf earlier this year. People look at my heavy lifts. They say, oh, is that dangerous? I say, always doing dumb shit that I get hurt.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just
cracked the wrist doing arm wrestling or one get a little boxing training done. Oh, I said, oh, I'm going to throw that Jake Paul right hook, hit a punching bag. Wasn't being a dialed in king.
No. So yeah, it's always a risk. Every time you step on the mat, there's, you know, you're risking getting injured. But
with that too, but I would say the higher belt you're rolling with, the less likely you're gonna get hurt. Just because I mean, I felt like I was at more risk of getting hurt rolling in the basics class than I was rolling in the fundamental class, even though I got choked out, arm locked, leg locked, ankle locked, all that stuff.
in the higher level, yeah. I knew that I wasn't going to get hurt. I knew
more artful about it.
Right. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You're more, as the better you get at it, you're more efficient with your movements. You're not, that's something you notice with people that are new and new white belts. They hyperventilate and they don't know what to do with their body, but they just want to move because they feel that they need to do something. Like you get on top of a brand new guy and you hear him like, like hyperventilating, like trying to get, and it's like, you know, you're for someone who's done it for any length of time, you're comfortable in that uncomfortable situation and you just get used to it. Okay. I've been here 1,000 times. It's not a big deal. He's heavy, but it hurts here, but it's not going to kill me. I've been in worse. I can get out of here. And you just got to think about it strategically, like it's a chess match. Okay. Well, he's got his weight here. I can get this grip. Okay. What can I do with this grip from here? I can get under him. I can elevate, you know, you start just, you know, and it just comes with time. The more you train this stuff, the more experience you have. It's just you're collecting little bits of knowledge every single time you roll. And, yeah, that's the biggest piece of advice I could give you there. Mm-hmm.
I don't think if you were to do it, the higher up you get, the less likely you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, so you get two brand new guys rolling with each other. It looks like a bar fight.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
When you get two very more, you know, seasoned guys, it looks like it's like water moving around a rock. It's just like, it's like almost artful. It looks like they're dancing versus like fighting.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And so from, I would say like a reputation and marketing standpoint, to what extent do you guys believe that your athletic careers contribute to the work? So not necessarily, well, I'm strong, so I did this, or it gave me the discipline, but I mean purely from people knowing of you as a stud muffin. Influenced your career as somebody that needs to always be finding new people. Yeah. Well, you know what? As somebody who new people will be consistently finding you because we don't chase.
Yeah. Well, you want to go first? You and me too.
Go ahead.
You know, a ton of my business has come from the several gyms I belong to, CrossFit gym, the jiu-jitsu gym. And I never like talk about real estate really at the gym, but that's kind of where social media comes into it for me, because I like try to be my, you know, I'm trying to take off the real estate hat and put on the jiu-jitsu hat when I walk into the gym. But there are times, there's plenty of times where people come up to me and talk about real estate, and that's okay. Well, that's my invitation. And I think that another thing I bought it is I really like doing difficult things. So, and it makes other things in my life like work seem less difficult. It's not the worst thing that's happened to me today. I got submitted 10 times by that black belt earlier today. Like, that sucked, or I learned from that. But I look forward to it every single time I step out there. But you learn something every single time. And yeah.
So yeah, it's like you became the person that was worth doing business with. So you're not just going up to the front of the castle, battery ram in the front door, saying, hey, real estate, come listen to here. Now you went around the backside and said, no, I'm just that dude.
Yeah.
And once you need me,
I'm here.
Maybe you can get a hold of it, because I know it's probably filling up, you know, because you guys talked about that in one of the podcasts, the 2-hour response thing. Cause I know mortgages are super quick response and high expectations and emotion for the homeowner. And so you give them the expectation like, hey, you know, I may not be reachable for a couple hours.
Yeah, pretty much. You got to have control of your schedule and all that. But I mean, yeah, like Zach said, doing hard things makes our jobs seem easy. I mean, I get told no on a daily basis. My job is to network and build relationships with real estate agents. I mean, it's like dating, in a sense, because you are trying to build a relationship to get real estate agents to trust you and send you business. So, and the rejection of that, I mean, constantly being told no and just to get back and be like, oh yeah, okay, well, you said no this week, I'll try again next week type stuff. Because agents aren't necessarily seeking out mortgage lenders. Actually, it's quite opposite. They're trying to avoid us. I mean, ask Zach. I mean, you can get, they get calls all the time like, hey, let's go. I'm like,
this guy has been bugging me for like the last month.
Yeah. So it's like,
sorry, bro. If you did any sort of research, you'd realize I'm kind of married here.
Right.
Yeah, blue eyes matching the shirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, I mean, you know, you build these relationships with agents, and you know, I'm not one of those loan officers that's going to sit there and just blow up your phone and like constantly, hey, send me your business. If we don't, like, I'll sit down like, hey, let's go grab coffee. Let's go grab lunch. And if there's a connection there and, you know, we can hit it off in that and through that and we can communicate business and things like that, it'll build and business will come from it. But I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, you got to send me a deal. You got to send me a deal. Send me a deal. Why aren't you sending me a deal? Or get upset, you know, that you're not sending me business. You know, there's enough real estate agents out there and I know that I'm not for everyone, which is fine. I have a great group of agents that I work with constantly that trust me, know me, and like me. And that's all that matters for me. And I'm going to continue to grow that, you know, and like Zach said, use social. The social and doing this is a good way for people to get to understand who I am. And I mean, you can't fake who you are for as many episodes as we can. Like, that would be very clear on who I am as a person. So, you know, baseball, getting to that level, playing at the highest level that you could possibly play at, you know, it takes a lot of failure and no quit. Can't have a fear of failure. You can't fear failure, but you can fear quitting. And so I essentially, you know, I know that everything that I'm going to do balls to the wall. I knew that no matter what, and I know I've said this before, but it may sound cocky. It's not so much cocky, but confident, knowing that the work ethic that I've picked up from sports like baseball, doing jiu-jitsu, playing hockey, still playing hockey, doing CrossFit, working out and training, the confidence that it instills in you that you can do those things and do those tough things and be successful and be dedicated to those things translate into what I'm doing as a job. It didn't matter if I was selling mortgages or selling real estate or a financial advisor or anything. I knew that whatever it was that I was going to do, I was going to be the best at it because I was going to give it everything that I had. Like failure, like I was willing to fail, but I wasn't willing to quit. So I was willing to put in everything I could and get to that point where I was a success. So.
Badass. You also deal with, because the thing with baseball is whether it's a pitcher getting a line drive back right back at you or the hitter receiving pitches that are just absurdly fast to the point that it makes you wonder why the brain evolved to be able to perceive 100-mile-an-hour objects right. And react to it. That's it takes stones similar to the roofing climbs.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm afraid of heights, so maybe not quite there, but yeah. So, but one thing, well, I know that we've got a few more minutes here and you've got a few more things to go through. One thing I don't think, unless it's on there and we haven't gotten it to it yet, but the emotional side of things. You have any proclivities on there about being emotionally intelligent and emotionally in tune with who you are as a person? Because I feel like that is something that a lot of people miss, especially when it comes to being a man, being like manhood. You know, I've had a lot of conversations with people that are, oh, I'm not going to go to a therapist. I'm not going to talk to somebody. I don't want to share my emotions. Why? Why not? Like I saw a post, actually it was Josh. What's more important? Emotional intelligence or just regular intelligence?
Oh, Josh Weisler?
Yeah.
That's the one I listened to last night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't fake that.
Well, he put a post up the other day about emotional intelligence versus regular intelligence. And honestly,
I'm a student of his too.
Are you? Yeah. So Josh, I would say like for me, like if you can't control your emotions and have an emotional IQ and understand your emotions, what good is just regular intelligence? I don't know if that, like I said, I don't know if that's a proclivity you have on there, but that's definitely something that if it's not, make sure you've got on there unless you're about to get to that.
Believe it or not, so faith and philosophical is the next one. Mm. And there's the element of the cognitive, which is what's my attitude or what's my self-talk? And Josh Weisler, I did the $5,000 coaching program. And have made significant steps after each time he and I have spoken. We still have another one on the agenda coming up soon. And so that's one recently where the cognitive side, I have made great improvements. And just having a language to talk through the root of, well, you may be feeling inadequate is often the root of a lot of things. So, if you may shrink down from the role. So difficult customer, I didn't call them for a few days, but I really should. Yep, you're shrinking down from the role. And 28 Jake and these sort of self-management tactics that I've discussed are primarily on the physical side. So what actual brain chemistry environment am I creating to be likely to feel certain emotions? That's partially why it's a proclivity of, you know, what is somebody likely to do or how is somebody likely to respond to things? I don't currently see a therapist necessarily, but it's in the some of the men's content spaces definitely over demonized. Now, what I will say is when it comes to relationships and things like that, make men vulnerable and open up. My experience is crying into on a gal's shoulder isn't quite the best scenario. So that's why I think the therapist comes in, is you got to get yourself right. So then the next proclivity is actually your role as a son, father, brother, strong friend, or husband. You can show up to those roles if you've got the emotional stuff sorted out. So I think the sort of pop psychology notion that emotional wellness is men really emoting in front of people and all that, my observation is that the results there aren't great. If you're crying in front of...
I mean, I'm not crying, but I'm not saying like sit there and cry in front of people and all that, but at least understand like why you're mad, what's making you mad, and where that stems from and how you can go back and control that emotion. Or you're upset, again, going back to communication, you're upset about something. Someone says something that upsets you. Why are you upset about it? It's not, they didn't make you upset. What they said made you upset, but why did what they say make you upset? You got to be able to go back in within yourself and understand, okay, what from my past or myself is upset about that? Because when you get upset about something, that means that what they said might be true. So why is the truth hurting you and why is it bothering you? Being able to come through, recognize that, and then being able to effectively communicate like why that bothered you so you guys can still carry on a conversation and communicate. I mean, the emotional side of things and being able to understand your emotions, this is where baseball was huge for me. Because if you can't control your emotion and you cannot be mentally tough, you are fucked in the game of baseball. Absolutely fucked. Because it is such a mental game. It's very easy. Well, I shouldn't say it. Once you get to that level, it is very easy to throw a baseball for a strike. Very easy, because you've trained your whole life to do it. What's a lot harder is when you've got a guy like Aaron Judge or Ohtani standing in the box and throwing that and having the confidence to still throw that same strike, challenge them with it because they are swinging a bat that they can crush that baseball with. And odds are you are going to fail more times than you succeed in baseball. And if you can't control the emotions and the mental aspect of it, you're screwed. And that's where you see most guys fail in baseball. So that's why the emotional side of things and the emotional intelligence is so important. And I'm not sitting here saying you got to cry on somebody's shoulder. Like, no, I get it. Well, that's the thing. That's the concept. That's where your thoughts were. That's where your head went. And that's not it at all. And I think that's where for manhood, people need to change that perception is like, hey, when you talk about emotions and talk about emotional intelligence, we're not talking about crying on a shoulder or being, you know, all this. It's being a master of the emotions that you can control or being a master of your emotions and controlling them in a way that allows you to be better as a person and effectively use the other intelligence and things that you have going.
An ingredient that and definitely came up in my work with Josh was talking about being a middle child and then framing experiences in every stage in life as being a winning and losing scenario or achieving versus not. And there are some things that, you know, like we were talking about the amount of sales you make that doesn't need to be a reflection of, you know, who you are. And it doesn't be something that's too emotionally salient with either, you know, anger. Aristotle talks about having the mean between excess and deficiency. So if it's, in the anger scenario, for example, Josh talks about anger, is you can be too passive and just let anything go by. You'll get walked all over, and that's not good enough. You could also have an explosive temper, but being somewhere in the middle seems to be kind of the right idea. So that's why we talk about like, oh, well, he needs to moderate his emotions. And there's the action of comparing oneself to others or of keeping score on things too much. I think the emotion after that is, you know, inadequacy or insecurity and things like that.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah,
exactly. or even if difficulty with others, because a lot of people's, it seems to be the case that the motivation for, you know, the success often stems back to, well, I want to look cool for other people, or I want to have friends, and, you know, the sort of social benefits of success. The grounding of when people are difficult is to kind of let it go, as they're, well, one, they're not against you, they're for themselves. And two, I just have taken the attitude generally that people are just trying their best. Mm-hmm. So even if they seem to have severely come up short and inconvenienced me somehow, I say, you know, they're just doing their best. I'm gonna give them a little bit of God's grace. That's another one that helps me focus on this guy.
Well, that goes back to the communication where you listen to understand, not listen to respond. When you listen to understand, you're going to put yourself in that person's shoes. Well, the book that we just read for the book of the month talks about that. And our never split the difference, the art of negotiation.
Oh, Chris Voss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
part doing of a whole that, podcast yeah. on that after this.
Yeah. Part of that is, you know, ultimately you're listening to try and understand what the motive is for the person on the other side of the table. And if you put yourself in their shoes, and one, I think one of the examples that he used was in the class that he taught, he put people like, hey, you're going to have to argue on the side that you don't want to be. Like you're a Republican, and they're going to make you fight for the Democrats, and understand, like, you have to put yourself in those shoes and understand why the Democrats are wanting to support and do the things that they want to do versus why the Republicans want to support. You got to go and fight in favor of the Democrats when you're a Republican. And that was part of the class that he was teaching. Now, not that example. That was just something real quick off the cuff. But essentially, yeah, you got to be able to understand. And if you can put yourself in that position to understand, it's going to make your life a whole lot easier versus trying to just push your, or like my individual thoughts on this. Because you're never going to win an argument, or you're never going to come to a conclusion. Like, people believe what they believe.
Oh yeah.
And it's not my job to put my beliefs on you. Your job, and I don't want you to put your beliefs on me. I want you to tell me your beliefs, and I want to sit here and understand them so I can understand who you are as a person. Because if you can do that, you're going to be in a better position moving forward to negotiate or help, you know, and win a situation than trying to just listen to respond.
And that's something with my verbal cadence too. I've listened to some things where people will ask something and then I'll pause, or I'll sound very pensive. And it's like, ah, this guy's thinking about what he's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good action item.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen to understand, listen to sit there and focus. And because a lot of just be quiet, just sit there and just, or like nod your head. Yes. I mean, we talked about our passive agreements that we constantly do, like, okay. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Stuff, you know, like that. Stuff.
And that's partially why I'm really working on the energy levels in the caffeine scenario, because my energy level, when it's like a wild animal coming into a social setting, like Tours and Pours, for example, yeah, I'll go in there, I'll give the speech, and I'll juggle on stage and do all this stuff. And then people will talk to me after, and I'm just still hyped up and not as much taking the second to be like, wait a sec, this guy just said he had a heart surgery. That's the most important thing right now, not the electrolytes after I get off the roof. So I do appreciate you. I do appreciate you telling me that.
Well, yeah, that too. And so, like, that's why, do you have a hard time remembering people's names?
That one, not so much. No. Pet.
Okay. Just checking. I mean, I know that some people, I used to have a really hard time. My first thought was like, going into a conversation, like, what's the first thing? Like, I'm thinking, like, what is the first thing I'm going to say, instead of, fuck, I don't even know the guy's name. And then I get into the conversation, and then, I mean, it still happens. I mean, I've had it happen recently. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just, you go in, and I just got to always remind myself, listen.
Zen mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of be zen. Anything else that you want to pitch before we get going?
Our cameras are getting to a spot we need to.
I'd say just for you guys, if you're ever in a sticky situation and you need a nice report made, not out here saying no roofs and all that. Big Jake's already got about 80 roofs on the year. But if you ever need a good document for like a closing or to help make a case for a buyer or seller and things like that. It's something I could do, and maybe we'll train sometime. Yeah, I really appreciate the time here and all that.
Absolutely.
This was a lovely feather in my cap.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. Made your acquaintance. I'm glad to have you on. It was great getting to chat with you and hearing all the things that you have going on, and that's awesome. I'd like to hit you with one. You said you listened to the episode, so you might not be as surprised by this as most people, but at the end of the show, we play a little game called the Tombstone Game. Here lies Jake. What's it say on your tombstone?
Stand too close to the fire, fly too close to the sun.
That's perfect.
Perfect. That's awesome.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. If you got anything out of this episode, make sure you click that like button. If you're not already subscribed, click that subscribe button, and we will see you next time.